Should become fully absorbed in meditating upon himself as an eternal servant of the Lord, and should thus perfectly worship the deity, remembering that the deity is also situated in within his heart. Then he should take the remnants of the deity's paraphernalia, such as flower garlands, upon his head, and respectfully put the deity back in his own place, thus concluding the worship. Translation responsibly. The worshipper should become fully absorbed in meditating upon himself as an eternal servant of the Lord, and should thus perfectly worship the deity, remembering that the deity is also situated within his heart. He should take the remnants of the paraphernalia of the deity's paraphernalia, such as flower garlands, upon his head, and respectfully put the deity back in his own place, thus concluding the worship performed by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The word tanmayam in this verse is significant. One who is purified by worshipping the deity form of the Lord can understand that he, the worshipper, is an eternal servant of the Lord and is qualitatively one with the Lord. Being like a tiny spark of the original fire, the personality of Godhead, Sri Madhvacharya stated in this regard, Vishnu Brityoham iti eva tadasvad bhagavan maya. Naivriham Vishnu Asmiti Vishnu Sarveshvaro Hiyajam. One should think, I am the eternal servant of Vishnu, and therefore because I am the eternal part and parcel, I am eternally one with him. But I am not Vishnu himself, because Vishnu is the supreme controller of everything. The basic principle of deity worship is that one must understand of oneself to be an eternal servant of the Supreme Lord. One who is addicted to sexual gratification, foolishly identifying himself with the external material body, cannot change his conception of himself from that of an enjoyer in that of the enjoyed. Such a person interprets the word tanmayam to mean that the worshipper is himself also worship, the worshipable object. Sri Jiva Goswami Prabhupada has written in his Durga Sangamani, his commentary on Sri Rupa Goswami Prabhu's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that Angarahopasana, or the process of worshipping oneself as the Supreme, is a gross misidentification of one's own self with the Supreme, who is actually one's eternal shelter. The six Goswamis have repeatedly clarified this point, but unintelligent persons within the Prakrata Sahaja community become influenced by bogus ideas of the Mayavada philosophers and thus display the deluded misconception that the worshipper becomes the supreme shelter. Such a hallucination is an aparad, an offence against the Lord. Therefore the word tanmaya in this verse should not be offensively understood to mean that the worshipper becomes equal to his eternal worshipable object. Now I'll just read the next verse as well, and that's the end of the chapter. Translation: the worshipper of the Supreme Lord should recognize that the personality of Godhead is all-pervading and should worship him through his presence in fire, the sun, water and other elements, in the heart of the guest one receives in one's home, and also in one's own heart. In this way, the worshipper will very soon achieve liberation. Thus ends the purport of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, the 11th canto, 3rd chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Liberation from the Illusory Energy. Om Agyana Timiranda Shyaganandana Shalakaya Chakshuramani Tamnena Tasma Shri Gurudaya Namaha. So this purport, the worshipper should become fully absorbed in meditating upon oneself as the eternal servant. So I've been very fortunate in a sense to be able to teach people different types of meditation in my life. And at this point in time we are also introducing people to different forms of meditation. As a devotee, it's interesting to note what people's concept of meditation is. A person in the outside world's concept of a meditation is something that you do perhaps after doing some yoga asanas, or something you do first thing in the morning when you wake up and you just meditate for 10-15 minutes. That's what we usually advise clients that I have to teach meditation, that at least take some time out to meditate on what we understand the Supreme, but to go within. But as a devotee, we're so fortunate because actually we have the whole day to meditate. Our whole day, everything that we do, everything that we engage in is a meditation on the Supreme Lord. Just as is pointed out in this last verse, the worshipper of the Supreme Lord recognizes the personality of God, he sees Krishna, all-pervading, should worship him through the presence in the fire, in the sun, in water, other elements, in guests that we receive in our home, and in ourselves. And so we understand that actually we're all servants of Krishna. This is the basic fundamental understanding of Krishna consciousness, that we're actually all servants of the Supreme Lord. That we're part and parcel of him is true, but qualitatively we're very minute and Krishna is very great. He's the controller of everything. And we are eternally with Krishna. We're one with him and he's always with us. We're never separated from him. We're inseparable. Krishna and us are inseparable. But it's always this point of individuality. We remain individual. We always have a service attitude towards the Supreme Lord. It's never that we want to usurp the position. As devotees, we never want to usurp the position of Krishna. So the Lord is the controller of everything. And to understand this point is a rare thing. And that's why it's mentioned in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that this is very secret knowledge. This is secret devotee business. We have a very, very secret understanding of our constitutional position with the Supreme Lord. It's actually very, very amazing. And this secret is such a special thing because the taste and the feeling of devotional life, or rasananda, is a rare gift. You know, it's a rare gift to be able to actually meditate all day on the Supreme Personality of Godhead in every service that we do, from the waking moment that we get up. It's a meditation, a different form of meditation, takes the form of so many different meditations. Generally, when a devotee, an initiated devotee, gets up, they wake up, they offer their pranams to their Guru Maharaj, they bathe because they want to purify their body, they put on their tilak, and each part of their body they remember Krishna, so that's a meditation. They dress in Vaishnava apparel to actually come and worship in the temple. They come to the temple, first thing they see is a beautiful meditation of the deities in their night dress. Very glorious, very wonderful, very inspiring. If a person hasn't been to a Mangalarati ceremony for a while, say for example like we're doing book distribution now, we used to have the marathons in the old days and you'd go out for weeks on end and you'd just be in a hotel and then you'd come back to the temple. The Mangalarati ceremony, that meditation of actually seeing the deities, again, is so uplifting. If you've been away from the deities for some time, to again see the deities first thing in the morning, especially first thing in the morning, it's so special. It's so enlivening, and it's such a great meditation. It fills you with ecstasy. For a grihastha, I mean, sometimes you take it for granted if you're living in the ashram like Brahmacharis, Brahmacharinis. Oh yeah, it's Mangalarati time, we run in to quickly greet the deities. You take it for granted, but sometimes us grihasthas, we don't get to come to Mangalarati every morning. When you get an opportunity to come to the temple, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you actually see the gorgeous form of Gaunitai, Radha Balabha, and Sisu, Jagannath, Sibhadra, Subhadra, you're overwhelmed. And actually, you feel ecstatic symptoms. I know it sounds quite esoteric, but actually, you do. Irrespective of who's leading the kirtan or whatever, but you become overwhelmed in that meditation of seeing the Supreme Lord. And at that time especially, you really appreciate, this is Krishna, this is God, I'm coming to see God. And you're overwhelmed with love for Him. So this is very, very important. So then we go from the day, we then have our solid meditation. We say our Gayatri, which is a silent meditation, and we absorb ourselves in the Gayatri mantras, in the Bija mantras, the powerful mantras for enlightenment, which are there in the Gayatri mantras. Then we have the opportunity of chanting our rounds, deep meditation, meditating deeply on the sound vibration of the holy name, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, very sincerely, very focused, very one-pointedness. And then we continue in our service, and then we have the opportunity of, again, worshipping the founder of this great movement, the giver of this mercy, Srila Prabhupada's Divine Grace. And then we have the opportunity to again see the resplendent Lord dressed up for the day, you know, and it's that image of the Lord. Like, look at this set on the deities. I mean, have you ever seen anything so beautiful in these deities, you know? When they're resplendent in such beautiful sets. You can go to the art galleries, you can go to museums, and you can go to different things where they have fantastic things on display, and they pale into insignificance when you see the beautiful form of the Lord like that. As an artist, as a creative person, it's so fulfilling to actually have that opportunity to see such beauty, such colour, such vibrancy. And somebody asked me the other day, another artist devotee, he said, after he saw the deities, he said, oh, that's so beautiful. And I had the opportunity to dress yesterday, and that's another meditation. When you actually are brahminical and you have an opportunity, and I suggested to this devotee, strive with whatever you can, whatever ability you have, to become a Brahmin, to actually take second initiation and have the opportunity to actually artistically and creatively work with the Lord. Because if you're ever wondering how Krishna works through each individual, deity worship brings that out. The reciprocation between the devotee and the Lord is so brought out in deity worship. It's amazing. Sometimes as artists, as a creative person, you think, oh yes, I'm creating this work of art. This is me that's creating. It's not. The Divine Lord is behind everything, all the intuitive sort of feelings. And you especially feel that when you're dressing the deities. It's amazing, you know, like, we dress sometimes, because the roster is sometimes a bit staggered, as to what sets we put onto the deities. And sometimes you get the same set over and over again if you're doing a particular day. You know how that is, don't you? Oh, it's a lotus set again, I put that one on the other. But it doesn't make any difference. Because then Krishna plays with you, like Lord Chaitanya or Radha Baba or Jagannath play with you, and they say, intuitively, inside, this is a real thing. You know, maybe I would like to wear just silver today. Just put silver on, isn't it? And you get this inspiration. Oh yeah. And so you're working with Krishna how to dress him and how he would like to be dressed that day. So it's a very personal meditation. It's a very, very sattvic, very pure thing, very wonderful thing. And so then we go in our day and we do our service. And we see Krishna everywhere. As a devotee, number one, you remember the deity is with you for the whole day. You take that with you. When you come for greeting of the deities, you take Krishna within your heart and you remember the set that they were wearing, the colours that they were wearing, how they looked, you know. Jagannath looked particularly beautiful that day. So on and so forth. And you keep that within your heart. And if we're working at office works or we're working at some different IT job, we remember at morning tea, God, Jagannath looks so beautiful, Radha Balabha looks so beautiful. And that picture starts to bloom in your heart and brings into your consciousness. Again, we're meditating. So then we also see Krishna in different forms all over in our daily activity. We are struck by the wonder of Krishna everywhere. You know, as a devotee, we're struck with wonder of Krishna's energy everywhere, his creative potency everywhere. Sometimes I'm driving into Gopal's, you know, and you see an insignificant little fly come through the window. You know how you have that, you're driving and this fly, oh God, there's an annoying fly. Now a non-devotee, a materialist, will say, damn fly. But think about it. A devotee starts to think, have a look at this little creature. Have a look at the mechanics behind this little creature. There's an infinitesimal little fly, you know, the mechanics that make this thing work, that puts life force into this thing, its legs, its digestive system, its vision, so on and so forth. It is an amazing instrument, and that amazing instrument is a creation of the Supreme. How can we be so flippant to think, I can destroy this thing? If we built something like this, if we were scientists and we built a robotic fly and put it together, it would cost absolutely millions and millions of dollars to create this little thing that flew in your window. You know? And we kill it. But we as devotees actually understand that Krishna's potency, Krishna's hand is behind all this. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And so our meditation continues in our day. So many things. We see so many wonderful thing. We see intelligent people and understand that the intelligence of that person comes from Krishna. And then we also see Krishna within the heart of every living entity. We slowly, as we develop in our Krishna consciousness, we start to understand that Krishna is dwelling within the heart, as it's pointed out in this purport and in this verse. And then if we receive people into our home, we also, again, understand that what we're doing is we're receiving Krishna. You know, Krishna resides in this person. Whether they're a nice person or they're not such a nice person, we welcome them because Krishna resides in their heart. So again, it's a meditation. And then the final meditation is that we also understand that Krishna resides in our own heart. We're so very, very grateful that Krishna is actually within our heart. That he has the compassion to travel with us, sojourn with us through all our ups and downs and negatives and positives and so on and so forth. Krishna is always there. He's always our companion. He's always our friend. He never lets us down. Everything will be alright. And even when there's troubles and turmoil and different strife, we always hear his little voice in the background. It's okay. Everything will be alright. Isn't it? This is the special gift of a devotee. This is the secret knowledge that a devotee has. This is the very rare gift that you have when you attain to Bhakti Yoga. Now there's many, many different so-called Vedic philosophies. Many, many. 99% of all the different Vedic philosophies and not necessarily Vedic philosophies, religions and so on and so forth, 99% of them are impersonal. Basically, at the core root of all their philosophy, God doesn't exist, or God is an energy, God is you and I, and so on and so forth. You know, 99%. So we are very, very fortunate to come into that one percentage where we understand that Krishna is a person, and he resides within my heart. So Krishna says, hardly one knows me in truth. You know, in Bhagavad Gita. Hardly one, anyone knows me in truth. But the devotee does. Krishna dwells within our heart, and we're part and parcel of that Supreme. Krishna is Ishwara, Paramishwara, Supreme Controller. And we're just a small Ishwara, a small controller. You know? And somebody asked me the other day, he said, oh, are you the boss of Gopal? And I said, no, I'm the servant of the boss of Gopal. So we all have our different departments, and you know, but we are very, very small Ishwaras. When I became a devotee, I was very fortunate because I had the opportunity to first be a Mayavadi, to be an impersonalist. As so many devotees actually are, and they come from a different school of thought. But when I was practicing the impersonalist understanding of God consciousness, it never satisfied. It never ever hit home that this is actually satisfying, completely satisfying. And it was only after I heard the philosophies of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada that it satisfied my heart and that it satisfied my consciousness that I could fully surrender to that. I could never surrender fully to the impersonalist philosophy. I remember asking my so-called impersonalist, my Mayavadi guru, who was generally a nice person. You know, are you my guru? Who is Krishna? What does this all mean? You know, what's my relationship with God? And all he would say would be, oh, this will all come. This will all come. Pay some more money, do some more programs, and you will find out this will all come. Be patient. And I just couldn't be patient anymore. And so, you know, their thing is that, you know, eventually it would come, I would say, listen, I want to know what are the other chapters of Bhagavad Gita? You've given me 6 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. What are the other ones? What more does Krishna say? There's so many chapters. Why aren't you telling me the whole? Oh, this will all come. Take your time. Couple more courses, everything will be fine. I couldn't anymore. And my friends and I couldn't anymore. And so we came to the temple. And I remember the first time I came to the temple, I had the opportunity to take prasadam. Now beforehand it's just dry vegetarian. Not a vegetarian, so to be an impersonalist, in some aspects, is a good thing. Krishna says that also in Bhagavad Gita. If you can't do it, you know, at least be an impersonalist. It's okay, you'll come to that point. But when I came to the temple for the first time, and all of us have had this experience, and again here is Krishna in another form of meditation, prasadam. You know, what better form of meditation is that to eat succulent food, you know, and actually absorb oneself in this meditation of eating? So there are many, many forms of meditation. When I came here the first time and I had prasadam, after 3 years of boiled rice, brown rice, steamed beef, blah, 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 which is okay and it's good. But it wasn't offered to Krishna. When I came to the temple and Ramai Swami was here and he was serving out, he was Ramai Brahmachari at that stage, and he was serving out the halva, you know, and he said, oh, Bert, you try some of this, you know. I said, oh, yeah, sure, no worries, you know. And it was a beautiful piece of halva and I had it and it was just like the lights went on. What? Where has this been all my life, you know? And I was so jubilant that I handed over a big donation, which was really unheard of at that stage because there were so many hippies and nobody had any money, and I just, wow, that's fantastic. And I gave Ramai Swami, you know, here's a big donation. Oh, very good. He was very pleased. So maybe that donation gave me the extra mercy to actually take Krishna consciousness a little further. So the only addiction, as it's pointed out here, is this addiction that stops us from appreciating that Krishna resides within our heart. Stops us from seeing the truth, stops us from actually knowing the secret, is that that we foolishly identify ourselves with this material body. In that we are addicted, you know, as materialists, we are addicted to sexual gratification. That's the pinnacle of sense gratification, sexual gratification. And in this day and age, it is an incredible chore to be confronted day in, day out with this sexual gratification. We see it everywhere. And the devotee has to rise above that. But because we're aware of the secret knowledge with this secret bhakti, we can easily counteract it. When the pushings come of the material energy, we can actually say, that's not for me. I've got a much higher taste, you know. And if we stay in our meditation, our 24-hour meditation, our Krishna consciousness, to be conscious of Krishna all the time, it's like water off a duck's back. When the sexual agitation comes in, no, don't want it. Because what is sexual agitation? This addiction to selfishness. Basically what it boils down to. It's an addiction to selfishness. Here, the devotees have mentioned that it's one who is addicted to sexual gratification foolishly identifies with the external material body. Cannot change his conception of himself from that of an enjoyer to that of the enjoyed. So in Krishna consciousness, when we receive this most secret of secrets, we become the enjoyed. We surrender it over to Krishna. We hand everything over to Krishna. I don't want to enjoy personally anymore. I want you to enjoy me. Use me. Allow me to be part of this meditation. Engage me fully in your service. So devotee is selfless. And we have to practice that every day. We have to practice in our meditation to be selfless. And if we actually see our day as a continuous meditation in so many things that I've just described, then we become more and more selfless. And we become more and more the enjoyed as opposed to the enjoyer. And that will eventually allow us to see more and more over a period of time the real truth, the real secrets of Bhakti Yoga. So it's pointed out here also, Tanmayam, the worshipable object. Now the impersonalist, the Navaya, feels that he has to worship himself. That, you know, I am that, you are that, we are all that. This is the dictum of the Navaya philosophy. I am that, you are that, we are all that. How is it in Sanskrit? What is that one? How do they say it? They say it, when we used to go to different ashrams, I won't say the ashram because this is recorded and we're preaching to those people, but what was that one that used to say? I am that, thou art that, we are all that. Anybody know that one?
Om Tat Sat.
Huh?
Om Tat Sat.
No, Om Tat Sat is a very powerful mantra. That's a very Vaishnava mantra. No, it's another one. Anyway, I'll think of it. Huh? That's okay. I should remember. I said it often enough. So it's just gone. Don't want that one. But they have this sense of understanding. I am that, thou art that. It's a gross misidentification. You know, they feel they should worship themselves. You know, when you go to these different ashrams and different centers, they actually have a murti of Guru and a murti of Ganesh and a murti of Shiva, and they worship. But ultimately, in the back of their mind is, I am you. You know, I am Shiva. I am Guru. You know, we're all one. And it's such a hodgepodge. It's such a misidentification. It is such an imaginary thing. And it's really not even balanced for them. They can't even really figure it out either. They find it quite confusing as well. So, Jiva Goswami has coined the term Achintya Bheda Tattva. Inconceivable simultaneous identity and difference. This is the wonder of the Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding, the Gaudiya Vedanta religious expression. In transcendent, undivided, yet variegated absolute. This is Krishna consciousness. Yes, we're one with the Lord. We understand that. We're part and parcel of the Lord. But simultaneously, we're different and separate from individuals, always serving that supreme lover, that supreme connection. So I wanted to read one little section from Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada points this out. It's in the second chapter, if you're listening. And it's a verse that most of us know. Natvaivaham jatu nasham natvamehmeja nalipa nachayri nabhavishyama sadeva yamataparam. Never was there a time that I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. The interesting purport in this is, in the Vedas, in the Kati Upanishad, as well as the Svatasara Upanishad, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is maintaining innumerable living entities in terms of their different situations according to individual works and reactions of work. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also, by his plenary portion, alive in the heart of every living entity. Only saintly persons who can see within and without the same Supreme Lord can actually attain the perfect peace. The same Vedic truth given to Arjuna is given to all persons in the world who pose themselves as very learned, but factually have poor funds of knowledge. The Lord says clearly that he himself, Arjuna, and all the kings who are assembled on the battlefield are eternally individual beings, and that the Lord is eternally the maintainer of the individual living entities, both in their condition as well as their liberated state. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the supreme individual person, and Arjuna, the Lord's eternal associates, and all the kings assembled are individual eternal persons. It is not that they did not exist as individuals in the past. It is not that they will not remain eternal persons. Their individuality existed in the past. Their individuality will continue in the future without interruption. Therefore, there is no cause for lamentation for anyone. The Mayavadi theory that after liberation, the individual soul departed by the removing of Maya or illusion will merge into the impersonal Brahman and lose its individual existence is not supported herein by Krishna, the supreme authority. Nor is the theory that we only think of individuality in the conditioned state supported herein. Krishna clearly says herein that in the future also, as individuals of the Lord and others, as it is confirmed in the Upanishads, will continue eternally. The statement of Krishna is authoritative because Krishna cannot be subject to illusion. If individuality is not a fact, then Krishna would have stressed it so much even for the future. So Krishna points out, we are always constantly an individual. So why do these people present this philosophy that we are somehow or other merged into a oneness? There's one other section that I just wanted to read for you as well, which again backs this up. And as you can see, this has been highlighted many, many years ago. And this is text in devotional service, text 5. For those whose minds are attached to unmanifest, impersonal feature of the Lord, advancement is very troublesome. So there is a chance for advancement. To make progress in that discipline is always difficult for those who are embodied. So it's not that the impersonalists don't make some sort of advancement. They do. They're following celibacy, they're following cleanliness, they're following vegetarianism. So there is, and they're doing good for people, they're encouraging in different ways. So their progress is there, but as Krishna says here, it's very troublesome. And it is. It's incredibly troublesome to try and get your head around, well, you know, I'm the supreme. You know, when we see all our faults and inequalities and so on, I'm the supreme. I created the whole universe. I don't think so. So the purport here that I highlighted is the individual soul is embodied since time immemorial. It is very difficult for him to simply theoretically understand that he is not the body. Therefore, Bhakti Yoga accepts the deity of Krishna as worshipable because there is some bodily connection, conception, fixed in the mind, which can thus be applied. Did you hear what Prabhupada said? So, for us, the deity worship, as it's mentioned in this report, is so very, very important because it actually, there is some bodily conception. So we've put Krishna in his personal feature. He's right there for us to worship. So we can get our head around it. This is Krishna as a person. It's such a wonderful thing, the deity worship. Of course, worship of the Supreme Personality in his form within the temple is not idol worship. There is evidence in Vedic literature that worship may be saguna and niguna of the Supreme possessing or non-possessing attributes. Worship of the deity in the temple is saguna worship, for the Lord is represented by material qualities, by the form of the Lord through representation of material qualities such as stone, wood, oil, paint. It is not actually material. That is the absolute nature of the Supreme. And here's an example that Prabhupada gives. A crude example may be given. We may find some mailbox on the street, and if we post our letters in these boxes, they will naturally go to their destination without difficulty. But any old mailbox or an imitation which we may find somewhere is not authorized by the post office and will not work. Similarly, God has authorized representatives in the deity form, which is called Archa Vigraha. This Archa Vigraha is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. God will accept service through that form. The Lord is omnipotent and all-powerful. Therefore, by his incarnation as Archa Vigraha, he can accept the service of the devotee just to make it convenient for man in conditioned life. So Krishna descends in the Archa Vigraha just to make it easy for us to put a garland on him, to dress him, to bathe him, to put tilak on, And all these different things, we're doing it directly with the Supreme Lord. When I was giving a lecture, and this blew some people out at a Shaivite temple, a Shaivite ashram recently, one of the questions that they asked me was, have you experienced Krishna personally? You know, like they were asking, have you actually experienced Krishna? And I related stories, and anybody that's done deity worship can relate to this. I related stories about the personal connection between the deity and the devotee. And I started explaining how, at times when I have an opportunity to address the deities, I get an opportunity to put tilak on the Supreme Lord. None of you know what I'm talking about. And you have to sort of steady your hand, I think I've mentioned this once before, and you have to steady your hand to actually apply the tilak on the Lord's body. And you hold his hand, and all of a sudden you get goosebumps because you know you're holding Krishna's lotus hand. And you're doing direct service to him. And I explained this to these impersonalists through this at this Shiva ashram, and they were like gobsmacked. You know? Wow, you experienced that? You know? And for, I heard later, after we did the Interfaith Festival, that there were conversations the whole week after that debating this thing of impersonal, personal, impersonal. And so we put the cat amongst the pigeons. It sort of really made them think a little bit. But this is an experience that any devotee can have, that personal connection with the Supreme Lord. So for a devotee, there's no difficulty in approaching the Supreme immediately and directly. There's no waiting, oh, wait, this will come, pay more money. No. It's directly. And for those who are following the impersonal way to spiritual realization, the path is incredibly difficult. They have to understand that the unmanifested representation of the Supreme through such Vedic literatures as the Upanishads, they have to learn the language, understand the non-particular feelings, they have to realize these processes. This is not very easy for the common man. A person in Krishna consciousness engages in devotional service simply by the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, simply by offering the regulative obeisances unto the deity, simply by hearing the glories of the Lord, and simply by eating the remnants of foodstuff offered to the Lord, and realize the supreme personality of Godhead very easily. So we, as representatives of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, make it very, very easy. You know? Like, even if a person is just so incredibly tied up with the dogma of impersonalism, what do we say? Oh, listen, just have some prasadam. Just have some prasadam. And we hand it out freely to actually encourage people like that. So it's a very easy progress. Sometimes, it is criticized that the devotees make it too easy. You know, the Mayavadis, the impersonalists say, oh no, it can't be this easy. They say, oh, you Hare Krishna devotees are just sentimentalists. You're all just... It's all just sentiment. All of a sudden you come into the temple, you know, you put on the dhoti and the kirti, you see the deities, and all of a sudden you're having ecstatic symptoms. All of a sudden you are, you know, having some ideas of realization. This is too simple. You have to study the Vedas for so many years and so on and so forth. The unfortunate thing is that this Advaita philosophy or monism, for them to actually have scriptures, they have to change so many things. They have to interpret, just like I was saying, there's one guru and he only did the 6 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. He couldn't go any further than that because it actually is too difficult to avoid understanding that Krishna is a person. So Shankaracharya also did that. He twisted things around. So that's why Prabhupada, when he presented, first thing that he presented to the Western world, he said, I'll give you Bhagavad Gita as it is. As it is. There's no speculation here. So the devotee is very easy to be criticized for being sentimentalist, and that devotional life should be more complex. And they say you're actually not very intelligent. But what is intelligence? You know, intelligence is simplicity. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Amrita Prabhavasya, there are 6 summaries of the different philosophies that he mentions. I just wanted to bring them up. The different impersonalists. Understanding. The first one is Mimamsa, where Jamini stressed the fruit of activities. If there's a God, then God must also come under fruit of activities, so it's Kama Mimamsa. The second one is Sankhya, as taught by Kapila, that actually material nature is the cause of everything. Third one is Naya. This is the Buddhist understanding that everything came about by the combination of just atoms. Then there's the Mayavada understanding. Everything is illusion, and the impersonal Brahman effulgence is the cause of all. So you have that philosophy. Then you have the fifth one is Patanjali. Now Patanjali is actually misunderstood, because Patanjali was actually a devotee. And Patanjali taught Raja Yoga, and the followers of this imagined a form of truth within many forms. So these are the main Vedic understandings, and they're all rejected by the devotee. And the sixth one is Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva's understanding of the Vedas, and as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, this is what we follow. And that's why Vyasadeva was the Vedic authority, and that's why he was called Vedavyas. And he was the Vedic authority. And Vedavyas is accepted by all devotees, as Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita. You know, he is the supreme. There was one other section that I wanted to read from Bhagavad Gita. Bear with me. 15:15. Where are we? You know the verse, Savasha Chahamriti Sani Vistu, Makasma Sinkana Mapoanam Cha. Here Prabhupada points out, or the translation is, I'm seated in everyone's heart, for me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By all the Vedas I am to be known, indeed I'm the compiler of Vedanta, and I am the knower of the Vedas. So Krishna confirms that, number one, I'm seated in everyone's heart. And we remember, always remember, that Krishna is present within the heart of every living entity. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So from Krishna, by his grace, by the compassion of Krishna dwelling within our heart, we either remember him or forget him. And it's all dependent on this point of selflessness. And so for a person that is selfish, these concepts of loving Krishna, of being part and parcel of Krishna, are incredibly hard concepts to understand. By all the Vedas, or truths, by all the Vedas, by everything that's relevant, by all truths, I am to be known. So there's different truths throughout the world as well, you know, in different scriptures like the Quran, the Torah, so on and so forth. There is a point of truth in most of the scriptures. We can reconstruct the Bible and we can have an understanding that there are different points of truth. So Krishna says, I am that truth as well. By all the Vedas, all the truths, I am to be known. Indeed, I'm the compiler of Vedanta and I'm the knower of the Vedas. So this is a validation at the last section of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna is saying, actually, I am a person, I am with everybody, and I'm the source of everything. So how can you refute that? So thus, when it says in this translation, the worshipper of the Supreme Lord should recognize the personality of God is all-pervading and should worship him through the presence in fire, the sun, water, and the elements in the heart of one's guest in one's home, and should also in one's own home. In this way, the worshipper will be very soon achieve liberation. This is the goal within Krishna consciousness. We actually want to be with Krishna all the time. So it's not that, this is the understanding of Krishna consciousness, it's not that at one stage we're all of a sudden enlightened. You know how the impersonalists have this conception that at one point, all of a sudden the lights go on and you become realized. That doesn't happen to a devotee, per se. It happens as a gradual thing. You all of a sudden start to realize, hey, I'm thinking of Krishna more and more in my life. And then, eventually, when you become totally conscious of Krishna, as I explained in the early part, in everyday activities, all the time, guess what? You're self-realized. You're Krishna conscious. And at the end of this life, you just continue on with that. Wherever Krishna wants to send you, wherever you go, you'll constantly be having this relationship, this connection with Krishna, ever increasing, ever building up. So that at this time in our sojourn with Krishna,
it's incumbent upon us to make an extra effort to actually engage people, because the devotee is so merciful, like Krishna is so merciful. We want to give this truth, this secret, to as many people as we can. And we always want to do this. But Prabhupada has instituted this Christmas marathon time to actually become more focused, become a little bit more one-pointed in getting the message across. And so all of us, in whatever ashram we are, we should somehow or other work out different ways to give this secret to other people. They are literally dying for this secret. They would love to know the truth. There are many, many people that would love to know the truth, that would love to get a book. And there are many, many Sankirtan stories. I wish I would have researched a couple, because remember Bhagavan? He used to have these far-out Sankirtan book distribution stories of people that would get a book and put it on a shelf for many, many years, and then all of a sudden that they would again read this book at a time that was pertinent in their life and they would become realised and so on and so forth. There were so many different... So this is a really important time to spread the mercy, more than we can ever imagine. Prabhupada wanted that. He was so intelligent, because Prabhupada understood that the Christmas time is a time of giving, isn't it? Everybody is geared up, oh, I've got to buy a present for him, I've got to buy a present for them. There's a little bit, I mean, there's also selfishness involved there, but there's a little inkling of selflessness. Let me buy something for that person that I love, like that, right? So there's this general consciousness, there's this general mood of giving. So we capitalize on that. We capitalize on that, and we actually make an endeavor to actually give more at that time. And people are more receptive at that time too. So we should make an endeavor to actually encourage our brothers and sisters to actually do more book distribution at this particular point of time, because that pleases Prabhupada. And we want nothing more than to please Prabhupada. Prabhupada is such a benefactor, is such an incredibly wonderful person to have given us this secret of spiritual life, of this true understanding. You know, we're such a small fraction of the population, aren't we? We're just such a small fraction. All the other ones have some impersonalist conception. Even you go to a Catholic church, or you go and we think that they may have some personal. When you really delve into the theology behind Christianity, it boils down to impersonalism. When you go into the theology of Judaism, it basically boils down to impersonalism. The devotees have got this secret, have got this message that we want to get out there. And we present it to everybody. And the sincere soul will pick it up and want to have a book. And this is who we're looking for. But if they never have an opportunity of somebody being able to give a book to, that we miss out, and it's our fault. You know, that we haven't done enough to actually try and help people and give them the secret. I'm so grateful, actually, to the first person that gave me an opportunity to engage in Krishna service. It was Radhika Ramana, a young devotee, Brahmacharini. And at the time it was incredibly embarrassing. But it was so, later in hindsight, when I think back at it, it was just such an auspicious time that I made my first contribution to the Hare Krishna movement. This lady came, and I was going out with a girlfriend, and I went to the movies, and you know, I was really trying to make a big show of myself, you know, that I'm taking this girl out, blah blah blah. And we came out of the pictures, and the devotees used to go and do Hare Nam and Sankirtan late at night, you know, really late at night. So this was 12 o'clock and we were going to go to the pancake parlour or something. And this girl came, and she was a devotee, and she had stacks of incense. I think I've said this once before. She had packets of incense that she was selling to engage people in Abhyata Sukriti, some pious activity and service to the Lord. And she had one lipstick of incense so you could smell, you know. And, you know, I'm walking down. Oh yes, I'll buy a packet of incense, you know. And she said, oh yeah, that'll be $5. So I pulled out $5 and she gave me the lipstick of incense. I'm standing there in Swanson Street with a lipstick of incense. Going, what am I doing with this? It's so embarrassing. But later I found out that actually I finally engaged, and that submission, that giving towards Krishna consciousness, actually allowed me to later develop my Krishna consciousness and eventually be here with you wonderful devotees in service of Srila Prabhupada. So we have to somehow or other, whatever way, start to be intelligent and think of different ways that we can distribute Prabhupada's books, because it's all in Prabhupada's books. All the secrets are revealed in Prabhupada's books. Everything will be okay. If a person is sincere, they'll find the secrets within Prabhupada's books. And it's our duty to now, on his behalf, really push at this time of the year, where it's a giving time of the year, to give to as many people as possible. So I'll stop here. Are there any comments or questions at all for us? Yeah, please.
When you mentioned this is in the 6th or 7th recent years, didn't you mention Jamie's Candle Mount?
That was the first one.
The first one,
yeah. That one in the ninth. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that that's number one. It was Karma Mimamsa with Jamini, Sankhya with Kapila, Naya Buddha, Mayavad and Patanjali, and then Veda Vyas. They're the six. Interesting.
The sixth one, Granda Sutra, there's one that's kind of impersonal, and then it makes the Bhagavatam commentary into personal. Like there's six incorrect places.
Yeah.
One is the Granda Sutra, and then when you have the commentary of Bhagavatam, then it becomes perfected. Is that
the Patanjali? Yeah. Isn't that Patanjali?
No, Patanjali is kind of.
He didn't make commentaries on the Granda Sutra, too. I can check it out. Any other comments or questions? Yes,
Prabhu. We have an altar in our house.
You got what, son?
We have an altar in our house, but it's made up of photographs, all the photos. What is the minimum standard we should maintain for the altar?
That's good. Well, it's really up to you. When we started our devotional career, Bhakti and myself, that was the first thing that we had, also photos. And then Prabhupada says, you know, in due course of time, if you want to have some deities of Gaudiya or Radha Krishna, that's fine. But then you have to maintain that standard. But, you know, it's incumbent upon all devotees that first thing in the morning, you have a place set aside for Grihastha disease. But you have a place set aside, which is your altar, and that you offer your obeisances first thing, and that you do some offering to the Lord, and that you chant your rounds in front of either the pictures or the deities of the Lord like that. And that's nice. You know, we have deities in our place, and I have Mangalarti, and then I do my chanting. But there's no comparison to when you come here. Still, this is where the potency is, you know. But every Grihastha should have that, yeah?
Since we stay very close, like, you know, we sometimes neglect worshipping the deities in the house.
Deities in the house or photos?
Photos.
Oh, that's okay. It's not, you're worshipping here. So, you know, if your service is here, that's fine. No problem. It's okay. But when you can remember, you know, and you see the photos, then offer some flour and put some flour there, or if you want to do some small offering, that's fine. It's really, Krishna has given us our independence to worship him in the way we feel. And intuitively, within your heart, you know what you have to do. If you become neglectful, if you have the deities and you just, I don't want to do it. There's that selfishness again, you know. But if you're selfless, you offer something to Krishna and you'll feel better for it.
Yeah.
So just whatever you can do, you know, and then increase from there. Anything else for this? Yes, for this? Yeah, but that's not the computer, that, no. Prabhupada mentions actually in the purports in that verse, in that section of Lord Kapila. This is not the Kapila that taught Sankhya philosophy. Different. The Sankhya philosophy, what was it again? Sankhya, that material nature is the cause of everything. Now, that's the summary that Bhaktivinoda Thakur is. So material nature is actually the all-powerful driving energy of everything. Instead of a supreme localized personality, am I correct? You know, it's more just that everything happens by nature. Do you want to expand on that, Anandini?
Yeah. Correct? You say the spirit is the source of matter, and they say the matter is everything.
Everything. Yeah. Yeah. It's another hoodwink. It's another bluff. It's another imagination. Prabhupada actually said that Sankara, Sankaracharya used imagination to hoodwink the people. and now 99% of the population, when you go to any of the other Hindu groups and stuff, they're all hoodwinked by this understanding of impersonal, because it's easy. In a sense, it's easy. Yes, right?
Yeah, it's a modern understanding is full of these six imperfect, incorrect things. People think there's a big bang and the universe came in, the planets and primitive life forms started and humans evolved. Everything's going on by the human nature. There's no,
that's
there's
right.
no superintendent. So modern understanding is full of this atheistic junkie philosophy that was panned by Kapila. The
Kapila,
that's
correct. Yes. Fascinating. Even now there's debates going on in the United States about the creationist theory or the, what do they call it? Supreme intelligence, creative intelligence theory as opposed to Darwin theory, and there's court cases going on trying to establish, okay, well, do we believe in the theory of Darwin or do we believe in the creative intelligence, you know? It's like, they're all blind following the blind, you know? It's like, and here, Prabhupada, by the mercy of Prabhupada, he's brought this Vedic understanding so clearly, so simply, that even a dull person like myself can actually understand it and can render service to the extent where, by engaging in this meditation, I can feel the presence of Krishna. Any one of us can. And you can feel his loving reciprocation. You know, like there's that old story of the Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, I think it was, where the Brahmana, you know, the Brahmana was just sitting and he was illiterate, and he was crying, and he said, "Well, how is it that?" That's right. And he said, "Why are you crying? You know, you can't even read. How can you be upset about it?" And he said, "Well, I see the picture of Arjuna and Krishna, and I." So simple, but yet so deep. The secret. You know, there's making this big deal about the secret. You've heard of that, right? The secret out there. This is the secret. We've got the secret. We should actually write a book, you know? The real secret. Last chapter of Prabhupada.
The two people write the secret of suing each other.
That'll be right. There's a couple of others that are suing each other. Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it? There's a modicum of truth in it, but they miss that one vital point in the secret, in this whole law of attraction thing, you know? They miss this vital point, that Krishna is actually the source of everything, and everything belongs to him, and simply we have to serve him, and everything, you know? And you can have the law of attraction if you accompany it by service attitude, not selfish attitude, you know, not lusting after, I want a better sex life, I want a better car, I want. As a devotee, we say, what do you want, Lord? What's the Lord want? What Prabhupada want? You know, we're the enjoyed, not the enjoyer. So then you can strive for many, many things. I want to build a big temple for Prabhupada and Krishna. I want to have centers all over the, I want Gopal's vegetarian in every town and village. Why not? You know, Prabhupada sat on the park bench and said it's all there already. So we can also have like that. We can also understand like that. But it's all for Krishna, all for Prabhupada. Yes,
there are also stories in the Krishna
Shastra
about how the deity reciprocated.
Oh, yeah.
Like Sakshi Gopal and Gopi.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is how. The Lord actually is personally present in the deity form, how he reciprocates with the devotee.
Absolutely. Even happens here. Doesn't it, Sukadeva? It even happens here. Where the devotee has a dream about Krishna, the deity form of Krishna, and actually ask Bhakti about it. She wants to note down. She's been thinking about noting down and making a book of experiences the devotees have had here with our deity.
So many times.
So many wonderful experiences. So I honestly, and all the Brahmin devotees here, honestly, we encourage you so much. Get your Brahmin initiation. Become fixed up and have an opportunity to worship these glorious deities. It's for everyone. It is not just an exclusive thing. We're not an exclusive club. We want everybody to experience, actually touch the small form of Radha and Krishna, you know, to touch the lotus feet of Radha Balama. Oh.
We actually feel the difference. So transcendental devotional service to the Lord is so transcendental and so blissful, so happy.
Mm-hmm. Nothing compares to it, does it? And you constantly remember that.
Meditation.
Sri Sri Radha Balava Bhagavan Aki. Sri Sri Jagannathi Balavan Subhadra Aki. Sri Sri Gaurani Thai Aki. Sri